Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In Homer at 3939 Lake Street and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and garden supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777. Hello, welcome to Homer Grown. This is a bi-weekly show about gardening, agriculture, and local producers. Our goal is to encourage, educate, and empower gardeners. We strive to provide diverse voices by interviewing local experts and garden enthusiasts. My name is Desiree Hagen, and I live on a micro farm in Fritz Creek, Alaska. For this episode, we talk with Sonia Martin-Young, the owner and operator of Alaska Aquaponics. She talks about her indoor year-round growing system, which utilizes live fish to provide nutrients to the plants. We chat with Alaska Seeds of Change about how their hydroponic operation offers outreach, training, and mental health services to at-risk youth in the Anchorage area. And Nicola Revelo has your weekly roundup of events and opportunities in local agriculture. Let's get started.
Welcome to Alaska Aquaponics. I am Sonia Martin-Young, and I am the owner and operator of Alaska Aquaponics. I have a fairly small greenhouse. It's 22 by 36, and it was specifically designed to sit on this little spot as kind of a prototype to see if this would work or not. So the way this is set up, because it's aquaponics, it's run by fish, and in Alaska we can't raise finfish for food, so I have some really gorgeous large koi in this tank over here. So I used a cistern that we would normally use for water, and I cut the top off of it, and I have about 70 koi in there. And the water flows constantly through here, so it's running through the fish tank and gets pulled from the bottom of the fish tank into a couple of filters that I have along the back wall. And then the water goes from the filters into each of the grow beds. There's a pump at the end of all the system here that pulls water up back into the fish tank, and it also takes water to the towers that we haven't talked about yet. So there's just constantly water flowing, and my goal is that the water goes through the system at least once an hour.
How many fish do you have?
There's about 70 in there, and of those, at least 20 of them are quite large.
Do you have 12 inches? Did any of them have names or personalities?
They don't. I got really attached to a bunch of my first batch that I killed all of. And I mean, I recognize different ones, but I just don't name them. Oh, I'll put a shout out to a few people did give me their goldfish that grew a little too big when I first got started. And so Martin Sorensen gave me Nemo, and Nemo is still living in there. And I can recognize him.
Is Nemo big?
He is. He's not a koi, so he's big for a goldfish.
How long do goldfish or koi live?
They can live many decades.
Whoa.
I think they can live up to 50 years. A long time. They slow down on their growth over time, thank goodness. But I do feel like I'm probably a little overstocked for what I need. So maybe I need to find some nice pond somewhere to go hang out in.
Do they reproduce in there?
I think they probably could do it. They probably could breed in there, but if I was going to do it, I would probably take a pair out and do them in separate tanks.
They probably could, as in the conditions are right.
Or the conditions are not perfect, but nature finds a way, says the midwife.
Are there people that have aquaponic systems where they eat the fish as well?
Yes. A lot of places that where I did my training and so on, they tend to have tilapia is probably the most common one, although some people have trout. There's even folks that use salmon. And so, yeah, that can be a big part of it, is to eat the fish. But seriously, not only is that not legal here, really, does anybody want to eat tilapia when you can go get a salmon? I don't.
Who wants farm fish?
Right.
Where are the fish located?
So the fish are in this tank over here to your left. If you want to step up on the ladder, you can peer down in there, and they'll probably make lots of noise because they think they're always hungry.
Oh my gosh, they're huge.
Yeah. Considering how small they were when I got them, they are huge. I didn't realize they would grow that fast.
How big would you guess that they are, weight-wise?
Pounds? Yeah. I would guess 3 to 4 pounds, some of the big ones.
Is this a closed-loop system?
Yes. So the water flows from the fish tank, the filter, into these. I have standing grow beds in here that are about 3 feet tall, and they're a mess right now. I will just tell you that.
No judgment.
And they definitely need to be cleaned out. But that's a place where I put things that I'm more likely to grow for a period of time. I have some tomato plants in there, celery that's cut and come again. I have some strawberries in there. And all of that's going to get pulled out and replaced because I'm having an aphid issue. But they're in there for now. And then the water flows down into a what we call a sump tank in the bottom of those and just goes through a pipe down to this other big raft bed. And so I have a raft bed that is 8 by 24, I think. And I work that. It has floating styrofoam in it with holes in it. And I plant the greens at the back of the raft there. And then each week I push the rafts forward. And I lift the rafts up and put them on my table here. And that's where I harvest. So almost everything in here gets harvested at table height because I've turned into an old lady, and that's really helpful. And then I have Bright Agritech towers. That's the same towers that Seeds of Change uses. Mine are shorter than theirs. And that's basically a filter-type fabric that the roots sit in between two slots in the fabric, and water just flows down through. So those towers are vertical, and that is going to all be stuff that is cut and come again. So I grow basil and kale and Swiss chard typically in those, and I just try to have a cycle where those get completely harvested periodically and replanted. I try to harvest at least 50 weeks out of the year.
Are there some challenges that you encounter in winter more?
It is not cost effective. I do this apparently for fun. I heat with gas and it is expensive, and I light the beds with electric and that's expensive. So I'm going to work on getting some solar, and I am actually working on some alternative heat sources that I'm kind of excited about. That hasn't happened yet. And so I really can't say that I've consistently made money here. But I get fresh greens.
Have you been to Chena Hot Springs and seen their system there?
Yeah, if I had a little geothermal here, I'd be good to go. Yeah, but the cool thing about this is with aquaponics, I can plant a lot of stuff in this small space. I probably have things maybe a little more crowded than they should be. My lettuce wasn't growing quite this aggressively until recently, and so those plants are pretty close together right now. So this little bed here is both my table area. I ended up needing two table areas. So it's another grow bed. And the plan for this is microgreens on the top, as I have pea shoots up there right now. And I'm hoping to have that totally full next winter with microgreens. And then this is going to be more pots of things. So like things that want to get carried away, chives and mint that need to be contained in some way, are going to live in here. So I just got this all moved and set up this past fall, and I've just been sort of experimenting with what I want it to look like, but that's the plan for this grow bed here. So I have 3 4x8 grow beds, two of which are planted, and then this is my whatever space.
Just so much work went into this, it looks like.
A lot of work went into this, and I have reinvented it several times.
Everything in here is doing well.
Yeah.
It looks like me.
Likes this time of year. Yep. In December, even with the artificial lights in here, and even though it's heated, things just do not, it's just not as happy. It just doesn't, it does it, but it's not at the volume, and stuff doesn't grow as fast or as well. I keep experimenting with ways to fix that, but haven't sorted that out yet.
What do you do in the summertime when you're getting so much light? I mean, you'd have to turn off the lights in the summer?
Yep, I just turned the lights off. We're over 14 hours of light a day, and so I don't need those on anymore. And I actually end up having to put a shade cloth along the front because the lettuce doesn't like it quite as hot and as much direct light in the summertime. So I usually put a shade cloth up just in front of where the lettuce grows. And then it allows all this stuff to get natural light back in the back part of the greenhouse too.
Did I hear you say that you prefer the vertical stands, the vertical growing better?
I like it because it is easy to harvest. I definitely have some drawbacks to it, and I think if I was going to do it again, I might go with a more of a rack system, but I own these now, so I will keep persisting with them. It's just that they do tend to leak a little bit more than I would like for them to. The tubing sometimes comes out and leaks water all over the floor, or the tubing will get clogged and I don't catch it until my plants are wilting, which isn't usually a big deal if they're mature because I'm out here twice a day, but if they're not mature, I can kill a whole tower of seedlings by letting that happen. That's a little difficult. And I don't like that the media lasts for, I've had some of the media for maybe 4 years or so, and I really need to replace it, and it's expensive to get it up here, and I don't like that it's plastic and have to figure out how to dispose of it. Yeah, so I'd love to find a different solution to that, but I don't have one yet.
Did you have any experience working with aquaponics before you started building this operation?
No. I have been fascinated with hydroponics all my life, and I'm not the only person that had this happen, but when I was a kid, I got to go to Epcot Center. I was probably a teenager. I was utterly fascinated by the Epcot Center hydroponics. So I went home, and I had a really cool high school that I went to, and my biology class, they let me do whatever I wanted, so I set up a really extensive hydroponic system in the biology lab, and so I ran that for quite a few years. I set up a little kind of modified hydroponic system on the fishing site where I grew up so that we could have lettuce all summer, and I didn't even realize at the time how well it worked until I tried to do it without the hydroponic system over there, and we don't have power over there, so that was all set up with just twice a day I would walk over and put water in this thing and let it drain. So for years I was doing hydroponics in our window up at the house. So I'd have basil going all winter, and to some degree I'd have some tomatoes or sometimes some lettuce growing, but not to much extent. And I kept telling all my friends that were interested, I was like, we really need to have greens in the wintertime in Homer. You should do it. I told people, you should do something. And people wouldn't listen to me. Because I had all this hydroponic system set up, my friend that worked at the library showed up one day and said, here's this really cool book that I have, you should read it, about aquaponics. And I looked at it and thought to myself, ugh, dirty fish. That's how I thought. And I read the book, and I'm laying in bed reading the book, and I reach over and start tapping my husband. Hey, this is really cool. Hey, we gotta do this. So, my plan was to do it on a small scale, but since I couldn't talk anybody else into doing it on a bigger scale, because, I was working full-time and had a lot of other things going on, so So I just did a ton of research, and that's how this has worked. And I don't know that I would have necessarily done anything different than what I did, even though I've kind of changed this out multiple times now. It's been a learning experience, and I just don't feel like I could copy anybody else's system and have it work the same way for me. So it's been a work in progress, and I really most of the time enjoy doing it. I've been doing this since 2014, a 22 by 36 greenhouse. That's the one thing, and my husband agrees with this now, I had to get his buy-in to help me build the greenhouse. I built everything else inside, but I needed help with the greenhouse. And so when I said, I really want to build a climate greenhouse that has a solid north wall, solid insulated north wall, and has all this good stuff. And he was like, or we could buy a kit. So we ended up buying a kit, which on hindsight, he would agree with me, was easily just as complicated to put together as doing something from scratch. And we definitely both feel like we should have had a solid north wall. But he helped me with, like, when I was doing the climate battery in the floor, it was his idea to lay water pipes down there, and that has been really fantastic. So he's been really helpful, and he sort of let me on my own to start building stuff, and then lately he's so interested in it now that he helps me out with all kinds of stuff. And I do have the normal aphid problems that people would have.
I see a ladybug right here.
I have many little ladybug soldiers working for me. Many, many little ladybug soldiers. So those little tiny brown aphids that we had all over the fireweed last year showed up this fall. And they are much more interested in the tomato plants and like the bok choy. So it's a constant battle. And again, because I'm using fish, there are some things that a person could spray that would be organic, that would be okay for the plants, but are not okay for the fish.
Are you talking neem oil?
Sure, yeah. That would be one of the things. I cannot use that on my fish. They do not like it at all. And so I really am stuck with washing them off with water, just spraying them off, which works pretty well for these little brown ones. And ladybugs.
So what have you learned about what nutrients individual plants need through your work with aquaponics?
So with aquaponics, I have a lot of nitrogen, because that's what basically the fish are producing. They produce ammonia, turns into nitrites, which turns into nitrates. So I end up with a lot of nitrogen in the system, which means that I grow really good green leafy stuff. And I can do that with just my fish food, which is great. So my inputs that I need are iron. And so I use iron regularly, and I don't even test for it. I just know how much I've, over the years, watching when my leaves go pale and that kind of thing, I've kind of learned how much I need to put in, essentially, although I had a lot of algae last summer and that kind of messed with my whole system. But for the most part, I've kind of figured out about the iron. And then I always add a little magnesium. And then the other thing that I end up adding quite a bit of is potassium. I do that just by looking at the plants. So the plants will start getting yellow. They'll start getting kind of curled or dried edges. And that can be either calcium or potassium. And just, again, over the years, I've learned that in my particular case, it tends to almost always be potassium. And so I end up adding potassium as a supplement, and that doesn't hurt the fish. It's an organic potassium supplement. And then I like to add a little bit of kelp meal periodically. I just feel like it kind of gives the system some micronutrients that it might be missing otherwise. I would say I probably add it once a month or so, just to give the system a little extra hit of some whatever it might need. And again, that's not harmful to the fish at all.
This seems like, you know, if there's any imbalance, it's less forgiving than soil.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure it is. Yeah. And that's where last year when I had algae growing in here, it just totally messed me up. I I've never had an algae bloom in here before, and it just went crazy. And I didn't realize how much it was just taking all my nutrient out of the system and turning it into algae, which was really annoying. I always feel like just when I start thinking I've got it down, something happens. I have to reevaluate. You know, it's a living, breathing system, basically, because there's all these little bacteria that are creating that whole nitrification to work. And that is, you know, it makes things alive, not sterile like a hydroponic system would be, which I think is part of why the plants uptake that so much better.
What are some of the challenges that you first encountered?
Well, the first thing that you have to do is get that nitrification process going. So you're adding ammonia and trying to get that ammonia to switch into nitrogen and then nitrates. And I thought, oh, that's going to be so easy. And I was doing it in December. Maybe that made a difference, but it took a really long time to even get the system like alive the first time. But once I got it going, it started running really, really well. And I was just kind of adding things. And then my fish started to die. And I've heard of this from other people. And I thought, again, for sure, I could figure out what was going on. And it was a long haul to figure it out. So I pretty much killed my entire first batch of fish. And it wasn't until I was well along with this batch of fish that I really figured out what was going on. I was just planting too densely in an area where that didn't filter properly. And so the poor fish were just not getting everything that they needed in terms of the plants help the fish because it helps clean out their water. So they get nice, fresh, clean water when it goes back into the tank. And they were not getting that. And I didn't realize that that was what was going on. Now my fish are quite healthy. You know, one will die every now and then, I think, just sort of randomly. And, you know, koi do tend to live a long time, but I still think that, you know, after 5 years or something, I don't have like a major fish kill at this point. So that's been amazing to kind of get to the other side of that where things are pretty stable.
So because different plants have different needs, are there any plants that you wouldn't recommend growing?
Yeah, so really that's why I stick mostly with leafy greens. And I try things like I have peas going right now, and I have the tomatoes and some peppers, but they really do not do as well. And my plan for this next winter to just have a separate little spot that is for those things so that I can plant them either in soil or can do some additives to whatever water I'm putting in with them, and they can get more what they need. So to have less green growth and more fruit, that's how you would do that. Now, I actually went and did some training at a place that does a lot of cucumbers and tomatoes, a lot. And he was successful because he set most of his system up to focus on the tomatoes and the cucumbers, so his additives and so on. But I can't do so many greens, leafy greens like this, and then still have it set up to focus on the tomatoes. So you could certainly grow those things, but it just adds an extra complex component.
Do you have a summer garden?
I do. And I don't include that in the CSA, so I just plant lots of carrots and things like that outside, and broccoli and cauliflower. I do lots of meat birds for my family in the summertime, and we have lots of chickens to lay eggs as well, and ducks and turkeys. And we now own four horses.
Four horses?
Yeah.
They're not here, right?
I have two here, and two are in Oregon awaiting to come to Alaska this summer. It's my new thing, a whole different interview about my wild horses. We just adopted two Mustangs. Yeah, and we have three dogs. So kind of a little mini farm thing going on here.
How many acres is
We have 3 acres here.
Is there anything you would recommend for someone that wants to get into this?
Start small. That would definitely be my first thought. And see if you can find a mentor or somebody who is, you know, around. I'd be happy to mentor somebody if they were interested that could kind of get you started. I've sort of done a little bit of everything here, and I feel like it would probably be a good idea to start with just kind of picking a type of system and just start there and get successful with that and then move on from there.
So you have a CSA?
I do.
Tell us what you're offering or give us some information about it.
So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and essentially what that means for me is that I have a group of people that commit to taking a bag of greens from me every week, and they pay me an advance for that. And in return, they get a bag of greens, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, farmer's choice. So it's whatever I have grown, whatever's available that week, they get in their bag. And I try to do a little variety of things each week for people. So that's the main way that I sell out of the greenhouse here. I have right now 16 clients, or so families, that get bags from me. And I'm hoping to be able to get up to 20 next fall. I'm hoping to do a few more with the microgreens too. I think that will make a difference.
Yeah, and so this happens year round.
It happens year round, yes. Every now and then the greenhouse needs to take a break. It's going slow or something, and I just have to skip a week, but yeah, we go year round.
How can people find more information about your operation?
Well, that's a good question. Probably the best way is just to call me on the phone, because I'm really bad about staying up on my social media. There is an Alaska Aquaponics Facebook page, but I haven't kept up with it very well. Yeah. Can I give you my cell phone number? 907-299-1800. And people can call or text me. I am full at the moment, but next fall, I might be having more people.
And that was Sonia Martin-Young, owner and operator of Alaska Aquaponics. Coming up next, we talk with Alaska Seeds of Change out of Anchorage.
So my name is Erica. I am a skill development specialist here at Alaska Seeds of Change. I work production and the sales team, and I also work within our hydro lab doing new, like, innovative projects to help our plants grow better. And I also help youth and train them on how to do the basic operations here.
All right. Well, hello, Desiree. I'm Kelly Ballantyne. Job title is Youth Mentor and Lead Farmers. And I kind of just pick up the pieces of whatever isn't getting done and work a lot on the operations, maintenance, trying to keep the hydroponic system going, and the outside gardening program. And then I also do a Evie's Brinery. So I'm one of the main guys running the brinery, making sauerkraut and kimchi using Alaska-grown products in the summer. Yeah, kind of a bit of everything. I've been working in agriculture for 10-plus years now, and food systems and agriculture. And I really like working with food, but also the social justice, social enterprise spin, where it's not just a commercial for-profit farm, but we're working with people to try and help them to see different ways to live life or find a better life through some work with the agriculture. I'm not sure if you're familiar with our Seeds of Change program, but we have the hydroponics warehouse in Midtown where we're growing lettuce and herbs. We also run a vocational training program. So we are run by Alaska Behavioral Health, and so we have a vocational training program for youth, primarily 16 to 24, where they come in here through apprenticeships or potentially employment at times to gain job skills and life skills. And we also, because we're part of Alaska Behavioral Health, we also provide mental health services. So there's clinicians on site, and they do like mental health stuff. And we have peer support specialists. We also have a power center, to drop-in center for youth, primarily targeted for homeless youth, but just anybody in that age range, once again, who wants to get off the street and come get something to eat, use a computer, get clothing, take a nap on a couch, whatever kind of support services for them as well. So there's a lot going on in here. And so it's a farm, but it's a lot more than a farm. That's really what called me to work here. I love growing lettuce. I love growing herbs, but I love also using that as a way to try to make our community better. It's kind of the big picture of what we're doing here at Alaska Seeds of Change.
So you had mentioned that you served youth. What ages do you serve?
For the Power Center, which is kind of like a side umbrella branch, they serve 13 to 23. Those are the services Kelly was talking about, where they provide clothes, hygiene products, give them a place to hang out or take a nap and, you know, help them with that. Our age range is from 16 to 23.
I think 24. Once you turn 24, you age out.
Yeah. Mostly because that's when you can start working and get vocational training. We also have people who come here and they get credits for school. So instead of like getting a regular paycheck, they get actual vocational services that help them graduate.
Yeah, so it's like a work experience credit. And we primarily look at 16 to 23, but we've also had 14, 13, 15-year-olds, just a little bit younger people come in. My kids are 6 and 8, and they come in here and volunteer sometimes. So we have a wide range, but our primary target would be that 16 to 23, aging out at 24 range. So we also work at Stellar Middle School and High School. We have a school garden there. The youth that come there, we have some middle school and high school age kids, so that's a wider range there as well, people that are engaging in the work we do.
Is this a nonprofit model?
Yes, it's a nonprofit, and we're really good at actually not making a profit as well, so we live up to the name.
Incomes come from grants, too, and we also do fundraisers, which are also more experience that we get to be involved in.
We consider ourselves to be kind of like a startup, and I guess we're 5 years old now, so I'm not sure if we're still a startup, but we are really innovative. We're always trying to figure out how to run our program and our operations better. We're always changing.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about working here. As a core staff, which is right above our apprentices, we get to have a lot of voice, and I don't know, I've never really been in a place where I worked around that. Everyone here is really encouraging as well.
What are some of the challenges that you've encountered in your 5 years in operation?
I joked that we're good at not making a profit, but that has also been a huge challenge. When I started working here about 3 years ago, and when I first showed up, there was discussion that we were losing too much money, and if we couldn't figure out a new way to run our program, they weren't going to be able to keep funding it. My day one was like, what are we going to do to keep this program alive? I think that's a lot of companies, especially small startup companies in agriculture, also really face that struggle of how do you keep your staff at a living wage and their paychecks coming every Friday? How do you keep the lights on, the water running? We've struggled that, and we're really lucky and blessed to be under Alaska Behavioral Health and the Alaska Mental Health Trust, I believe it is. We've had a lot of support from them through the years, and Alaska Behavioral Health is just, they've been with us since I've been working here, keeping our doors open, keeping the lights on, and helping us to figure out how we can keep the program funded. So I'm really thankful for that. What sort of stuff have you seen, Erica?
Since the year I've been here, we've kind of seen a lot of issues trying to find ways to combat aphids and thrips. Those are pretty much our main issues. And then we wouldn't be organic per se, but we do carry those principles. Like, we don't do pesticides until like a last resort. So we try to manage it the best as we can using the integrated pest management system. And I would also say, same with the profit, like we had some issues with, plants are plants. You can't really control what they're gonna do. You know, sometimes our basil is good, sometimes our parsley is good. And we work really well with those changes and being able to push what we can at the moment to make the best profit. So
yeah, it's really interesting. My background's in outdoor farming in the dirt, and when you create a healthy ecosystem, when you really support diversity in plants and animals and bugs, a lot of your issues will work themselves out over time if you work with nature as a partner. But with hydroponics, that's not the case. You need to be in charge of all the variables, the atmosphere, the water, the temperature, the lights, the amount of CO2 in your air, the amount of humidity in your air, that's all controlled. And so that was a big learning curve for me. And so we're really still learning what that looks like and how much with the, she mentioned, integrated pest management system, we try and use ladybugs. And it never stops. It's always something, and we're always learning. And it's the hydroponics is a really delicate, complicated system to enter into. And none of us, when we started working here, were hydroponic farmers that I'm aware of. So we've all been learning together. And it's been really interesting, that's for sure.
we get to test new ways to grow. And right now we've been working with compost tea, and it's actually been helping out. The tower that we've been using it on, we've noticed like better growth, and we're going to try to figure out how to add that biological part to the hydroponic system. But like, it's still a learning in process.
Oh, I said never a dull moment. It is really a good lesson for me. Like I said, with outdoor farming, a lot of times the plants would kind of take care of themselves in a way, and just with a lot of healthy soils and stuff, it wasn't too complicated. And here, you really do learn to read the plants and look at a plant, try and figure out, well, what's going on here, because it's not going to just fix itself. If the plants are sick or infested with bugs, it's on us to really dial that in. So it's very interesting. Also with our aphids, we share space with the Arctic Harvest Deliveries, which is really great. They're a local distributor from all the farms. They actually get stuff from Homer even and distribute to restaurants and customers in the Anchorage area, Anchorage in the Valley. And so they're in our warehouse, which is super convenient with all that stuff coming and going. A lot of like the other hydroponic farms, especially marijuana farms, some of them I've heard you got to put on like a Tyvek suit to go into the grow rooms. In our grow room, we have partners bringing in pallets of produce in and out all day, which also means that we are getting in bugs brought in through that. But yeah, so we'll never be able to keep a sterile, bug-free environment, but we can also have a great partnership. So, you know, it's one of those things you change what you can, you control what you can, and then you learn to deal with what you can't, adapt to it.
You had mentioned that you have three different sections. Are plants grouped within these sections based on their needs?
Yeah, we mainly grow lettuce and herbs. So we have a whole section for our herbs. We grow like different types of basils and dill and chives. And we also have lettuce. So we sell a lot of lettuce. That's mainly our big push. So we have our second and third zone all for Salanova.
And we have custom nutrients out of Colorado. That one is a lettuce mix and the other one's an urban pepper mix. And they can actually switch back and forth, but theoretically we have nutrients mixed for each of our crops. And then we use EC, it's electrical conductivity, to measure the nutrients in our main tank so that the concentration of nutrients is stable. And so the herbs, I believe, have a higher concentration than the lettuce. So we mix them a little stronger as well. We also control the pH in the water. We lower the pH down. So each zone is a little customized. You can swap them back and forth. They'll survive. We're trying to figure out what the optimal nutrients and concentration of nutrients is for each crop.
We also have different lights too. Like the herbs, they like a more neutral light. And then for the lettuce, they also like higher sun. So we turn up the red light a little bit.
I didn't even know that. So I'm even learning things through this interview.
So Alaska Seeds of Change operates under the umbrella of Alaska Behavioral Health. What ways does this program promote mental health?
Like I said, we have in-house therapists and clinicians. When we have new apprentices come on, we start with a mental health 101. So we have a peer support specialist will come and spend about an hour, I think, with them, just telling them about what we do in our building, what kind of programs and groups are available. And then they have the option if they'd like to enroll in services. So a lot of people are able to enroll through Medicaid. So I don't think anyone actually is paying for services out of pocket, and most people don't have any like real insurance, so people are coming in through Medicaid. So then they can enroll if they are so inclined and get services. We spend a lot of time doing like trainings, so it's kind of vocational trainings on how to do a tour or how to be a leader. Every day 1:45 it's called movement group, so everybody is encouraged to do that. It's not required. We'll go in the parking lot, play volleyball, go for a walk, and we'll spend 15 minutes just doing something as a group, or just like all these crazy games they've invented, and our clinical staff will come down and run those. And so it's kind of normalizing group so that people are getting used to like, oh, this is so-and-so, and we're going to go hang out together and do something together. And then if they're interested in being part of one of our therapy groups, it's not this weird thing. It's like, oh, it's just like movement group every day at 1:45. And so if anybody's having a crisis, we have on a regular basis people coming in here with life challenges, and so they'll be in varying degrees of mental health crisis. And so, you know, if you do that at McDonald's or Subway, they're probably gonna say you aren't fit to work today, you should probably go home. But what we work on is like, okay, we can support you through this. And so even if they're not an enrolled client, we can still connect them with our clinical team and say, hey, can you come upstairs and talk to so-and-so? We try and create a safe place where people can come in here, our youth especially, can come in here and not hide from their problems and not have to put on their best face and act like everything's okay, but this is a really supportive environment, and really we try and make a safe, supportive environment where people can be vulnerable and real with us if they have issues, and then we can help them to figure out the appropriate way to address and deal with those issues.
I think a big part of it is just like normalizing any stigmas associated with mental health. At the end of the day, we do a circle and we, you know, talk about how our day is, and we ask a random but funny question. And I've really seen like people come into this program and grow into their self more and, you know, get out of their shell. And I think just getting in groups and, you know, learning about mental health too as part of their apprenticeship program really just helps to open the door and really open people up too.
We're considered frontline workers because if all the farmers quit showing up to work because of the COVID, we'd be in really bad trouble right now. And two, we're frontline mental health providers because we provide essential services that cannot be done virtually and that wouldn't be appropriate to stop providing them. So our building hasn't been closed a single day because of the pandemic. We have been able to provide a place for youth to come and do important, meaningful work. And we were able to keep our COVID procedures running really smooth. We've had zero known community spread inside our program. So we've been able to provide a safe place for people to continue to engage in work and mental health services through the pandemic, which has been really amazing because of the huge amount of mental health crisis people have been facing during and because of the pandemic, that we can get youth out of their houses and out of unsafe places where they aren't safe and aren't being supported. I know at times we've really struggled because we're trying to figure out, do these people need to stay home or can they keep coming to work if they keep masking and shielding and doing all our breath checks and all that? I actually checked in with a couple people and said, do you even feel safe being at work? One person told me, they said, I feel safer at work than I was so scared about not being able to come to work for 2 weeks. I was really scared. I'm glad that we can keep each other safe using masks and shields. And I was so surprised to hear that was so valuable that we have our doors open for people to come. Really stuck with me.
Here, we are important, you know, and we definitely get treated with value.
You know, one thing I've noticed personally about the pandemic is it's normalized how people express their mental health issues. So I'm wondering if you have encountered any changes in that regard during the pandemic.
We've been really focused and we really value normalizing mental health, that like it's okay to talk about challenges. And if you say you're depressed, we're not going to look at you funny or ask what's wrong with you or even whatever, like whatever things people might be struggling with. We have very big spectrum of what people come in here that are just challenging them. And every one of us has things we struggle with. And I think we've, from day one, it's been normalized. It's okay to talk about it. It's not taboo. It's not something you can't talk about at work. And like, if you're missing work, we're not going to say you're fired because you didn't show up to work for 3 days. We're going to say, hey, like, what's going on? Like, we need you to come to work, but we need to like understand like how we can support you in coming to work. And so I don't think in our space it's changed much since the pandemic.
Well, it's hard to say because I've only been here a year, but I have noticed, like, you know, you can be open about your any mental illness and that is perfectly okay. It's also hard to say just on like the outside perspective, because I think, like Kelly was saying, we provide like a really safe and nurturing environment. So people just, when they're here, they really enjoy being here.
We try and find that balance where we hold people accountable and like, and be real with them. We do need you at work and this is important, and this is important for your mental health. What does that look like? How can we help? So, you know, we walk an interesting line of, we are a vocational training program. I am not a therapist. I'm not a clinician. I'm not a pastor. I'm a mentor, but that's pretty low on those level things. And so really I'm here to help people get vocational and life skills, and I'm not here to help them work through their depression in a clinical setting, but I can be here and say, hey, how's your weekend? It's good to see you. I worked in homeless shelters with guys in rehab for years in a similar setting, but I didn't have much training working with people with trauma, especially we talk about trauma and awareness of And so I didn't have that. I knew working for years in these other programs, I was like, I feel like I'm missing important tools, important part of what I need to be doing my job well. And since I've been working here, I've been really getting a lot of that, those tools and like understanding how trauma can affect so many different things in people's lives. And we just really try and be aware of, like, if somebody's acting this way, it's not, well, we better fire them, or we don't need a punitive punishment for them because they're doing this thing, but like, let's try and understand why they're doing it and what's causing this behavior, and then work on those things to try and get this person where they can be at work in an appropriate headspace. So it's really fascinating. I've really learned a ton about mental health in my job as vocational training working guy.
Yeah, we do a CPI training every year too. The company pays for that, and they definitely value giving us knowledge.
What is CPI training?
Crisis prevention intervention. So basically it trains us and it tells us like how to look for warning signs in case someone is having like a potential crisis.
So after people involved in this program age out, you know, do they go on to work in agricultural fields? Is there a transition period? Do you have contact with those people? What happens after they age out?
So we consider ourselves to be kind of that transition period, just because this is like the time when people are trying to, you know, get to better jobs. And basically a lot of people come in here and like they like agriculture and they want to move on, but we also help them with building resumes, building job skills to get a job that they want. So we work with whatever their goals are. And we actually started doing more career development too. Everyone who comes to our program has career development time where they get to spend time trying to do whatever they need to take that next step. So they definitely don't leave here like without anything. They definitely get a support and move on to higher paying jobs.
And I want to be real clear, we aren't a farmer training program. We're not trying to get people into agriculture. We are as a vocational training program. We're trying to get people ready to join the workforce. And I love farming. I love agriculture. That's what I want to spend my life doing. And I would not recommend people that that's what they should pursue unless that's really where their heart's at, because if you want to start your own farm, you're going to need a large amount of capital or go into a lot of debt to do that. So we are not telling people that we're getting them ready to go work on agriculture for the rest of their lives. I don't want to do that to people. I'm on that track and I love it, but it's also not an easy road to hoe, as they say. So we are really big on helping people figure out what they want to do. Like, we're trying to connect more with vocational training programs. We've got one guy who wants to be a lineman working on power lines, so we're getting him, trying to get him set up with the lineman's apprenticeship program. We have another guy who is interested in welding, so I'm working with trying to get him set up with a pipe fitting apprenticeship with the Iron Workers Union. So we are really trying to connect them with jobs that they can actually live doing. So like, if you get into the Iron Workers Union, you can make a living wage and live comfortably and have benefits and live steady income year round. If we get them into farming, I'm really concerned that they will be a life of poverty and unemployment for long periods of time in Alaska. So I love farming. I know you guys are a farming program, but I'm not pushing people into farming at the current time. We're looking at using USDA grants to do a farmer training program, but those would be people who would be coming here potentially in a, like taking a summer break from college, and we'd be doing intensive farmer training programs like they do at Calypso Farms in Fairbanks is a really good example of a farmer training program, but that is not what we're doing. The farming's kind of just we could be building pallets or cleaning cars or fill in the blank. I love the farming. That's what brought me here. So yeah, so it's more the vessel that gets them what they are really getting is those that prepared to be an adult and have a job. But what we work really hard on and why we've expanded our program outside of the Stellar and we have a big garden around our building is you can grow a lot of your own food in a small little piece of land. I'm trying really hard to help people see ways they can grow food for the rest of their lives in their yard or in their patio or wherever. So we worked really hard on creative ways to build lasagna beds. We do planters and tires and boxes. We grew a bunch of sorrel in a big box a couple of years ago. So we were trying to show people that you don't need an acre or a giant yard to grow your own food, but you could have a regular job that pays your rent and still grow food in your balcony or in your small yard for the rest of your life and have that greater sense of food sovereignty by just having a small little garden or being a part of a community garden. So we really value people having access and the knowledge to get really healthy and good food. I remember one guy, I pulled a pea off a plant and said, hey, you want to try a pea? He said, I haven't had a pea since I was 6. And he was like 19. Right. And so, you know, like this guy be able to have a pea, like just eating a pea off a plant was a big thing for him. And so I really think there's value in that, just helping people to think about all the food that is out there that we can grow in Alaska, we can grow in our yards and our patios. So as opposed to teaching them how to farm, we really try and teach them how to feed themselves and be aware of the food that's out there.
Is there anything else that you guys wanted to say or anything that I might have missed?
Yeah, I know we talk a lot about mental health, but there's definitely a lot of knowledge to be learned here in different aspects. And, you know, not just apprentices, our core staff, our lead staff. We're constantly learning, like, new stuff here, and it's really great.
That was Kelly Ballantyne and Erica Markham from Alaska Seeds of Change.
Hi, I'm Nicole from Homer Soil and Water with this week's roundup of news and tidbits on local agriculture and wild habitat too. First up is next week's Know Your Land Talk on Small Acreage Pasture Management, happening Tuesday, April 27th at 12 p.m. For this talk, Karen Sonnen from the USDA NRCS Homer office will bring her years' worth of experience to the table and share insights on how to manage your pasture grasses or to farm your grass to provide better feed for your animals. Do you pasture livestock? Would you like to? This talk might be for you. Hosted by Homer Soil and Water Conservation District and the NRCS Homer office. No registration is necessary. Find the link to join on the Homer Soil and Water website or our Facebook page. Next up, I'm happy to announce that the Homer Seed Library is currently offering a series of online workshops, and they're free to attend. These great little classes are made possible through a generous grant from the Homer Foundation and will be taught by Saskia Esslinger, who coordinates the Seed Library and also teaches permaculture growing through her business at teachgardening.com. Here's the rundown of the classes planned for this spring. April 27th, permaculture gardening. May 4th, vegetable gardening for beginners. May 11th, no-dig gardening. May 18th, beginning seed saving. May 25th, intermediate seed saving. June 1st, advanced seed saving. And June 8th, gardening with children. Classes will be held in the evenings, and again, registration is free and open for anybody. You can do that at www.teachgardening.com and click the Homer Seed Library tab at the top of the page. A couple more online workshops to know about, hosted by the Homer Soil and Water Conservation District on Wednesday, April 28th, Phone Apps for Farmers. We'll dive into some of the most useful phone apps to help farmers with invoicing, planning, and generally making life easier. Then, on Wednesday, May 5th, Touchless Payment Options. Do you have a farm or cottage food business and want to do direct sales without having to handle cash? This talk will give the scoop on what's out there. Not just for farms, anyone is welcome to join. Both of these presentations will begin at noon and run for about an hour. No registration is necessary. Find the links to join on the Homer Soil and Water website or our Facebook page. And lastly, some news about the Alaska Food Hub, the Kenai Peninsula's online farmers market serving Homer, Nanilchik, the Central Peninsula, and our friends across Kachemak Bay in Saldovia. First off, they will begin doing ordering for the Nanilchik, Soldotna, and Saldovia pickup locations beginning on April 30th, and each will run into October. And if you're interested in selling your own locally grown food, cottage foods, or other local products, you can take part in their 2021 vendor training session. This will be held May 20th, 6 to 7:15 p.m. via Zoom. If you can't make it to the live training, they will be recording it, and you can reach out to them to get that recording. The Food Hub has been open for ordering in Homer since February 12th, so if you haven't had a chance to get on there and check it out, now is a great time. The local products on offer each week are available from Fridays at 12 noon through Mondays at 10 p.m., so this being a Saturday, ordering is open right now. Then you, the customer, just pick up the great stuff you bought from local producers on Wednesdays at the Food Hub's central location. You can check out the Kenai Peninsula's own food hub at www.alaskafoodhub.org. And happy April, everybody. It sure is nice out there lately. I hope you're all enjoying that spring has finally arrived. Until next time.
That's the show. I want to thank Sonia Martin-Young from Alaska Aquaponics for talking to us about aquaponics. It was a great interview that ran long, and fortunately for the audience, I edited out my story about getting a tooth pulled in a dentist's living room, which I swear was about aquaponics. Thanks to Kelly and Erica from AK Seeds of Change, who talked about their operation and mental health issues. As always, thanks to Nicole Arevalo and Homer Soil and Water Conservation District. I want to thank local musicians Carly Konomak, Kevin Cope, and Ryan Black for contributing their music. I've realized I've been doing a great disservice to Ryan by neglecting to tell you that you can find his music on Bandcamp by searching for Glacier Maximus. We also had a phone conversation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Due to time constrictions, we will air that segment in the next episode. Please direct your comments and questions to Desiree, that's D-E-S-I-R-E-E, at kbbi.org. I've been your host, Desiree Hagen, reminding you to support your local farmer. Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In Homer at 3939 Lake Street and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and garden supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777.